They are an approved manager by our firm. We are monitoring them even more closely because we want to make sure that they continue to be appropriate for the operating pool. So that's how we're keeping a close eye on them.
So what would happen if they did not perform in the manner that you think they should perform? The review courses, are we able to take them out of the management pool?
They can be terminated.
They could be terminated. And during the RFP process that we're currently in the middle of for the fixed income managers, for the operating pool and the endowment pool, we are not only looking at new managers, but looking at whether current managers should be replaced by new managers during this process.
But you may want exposure to a volatile part of the market over a long horizon and ride through that as part of a broader diverse strategy, diversification strategy. Well, can I ask you something that it looked like about $1.2 billion was in what's called the operating pool, which is a lot like cash or short-term investments, non-equities. And then there looked like about $300 million in equities, although about 20% of that looks like it's in cash or short-term. And that cash and short-term investments over time are going to yield a lot less than an equity portfolio. And I wonder whether or not the $1.2 billion that's in the operating pool has increased or decreased because of the volatility of the state's payments to us. That is, if we were assured that the state was going to pay their bills on time, we could divert money from an operating pool where we need to reach into that cash at a moment's notice and put it into an equity pool, which we could invest in a much longer horizon. And whether or not we need to identify this as an effect of the state's,
underfunding,
their accounts receivable, account payable issue for them, I guess, and the effect of that is masked, but it's present, and it's present here because we've diverted $1.2 billion into cash in order to compensate for the state.
I hope the point was it had been made that exactly that was what was happening. We were trying to stay more liquid in our operating pool just because of the state situation.
So what is the cost of that liquidity? That is, over a long-term horizon, you might expect 8 or 10% from equities.
What do you think would be the spread?
And maybe
between,
2%
kind of where
from
we are
thing.
If we could push more
so
into
it. It might be a 6 or 7% spread on $1 billion. I mean, the state's costing us $60-70 million a year.
So as far as long-term expected returns in equity and fixed income, we would expect equities to return approximately 7.5%, anywhere between 7.4 and 8, depending on U.S. versus non-U.S. Fixed income, core fixed income, 4.5%. Cash would be closer to 1-1.5%. So if you're looking at the opportunity cost of holding this liquidity, that would be one way to look at it.
So is that about 5% then?
Approximately 5%.
And if the state was paying that $600 million a year, if that receivable wasn't 300, we'd have at least 300 million more in.
I mean, you could apply, I mean, the receivable at the end of 2011 is, or our loan to the state is $313 million that they haven't paid. So you could apply that percentage against that type of number to give you a general idea of what we we'll have forfeited.
Yeah, I'd like to have that.
I'd like to have half.
Great point. I'm going to work that into my speeches.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's a really interesting.
That's right.
That's the thing. I mean, if you look at the that number on the top, that $1.2 billion versus the 3 or 270 or whatever it was, and that's the real issue right there. We have all this in cash. Yeah. You are never going to build a huge endowment with these allocations. And right. In our other allocation, we've got 20% of that in cash. So we really, we're
yeah. That's right.
You can't build for the future. You slowly die.
And you add on that our rating, our credit rating, which is affected by the state on top of it.
Yeah. And then, of course, inflation. So if you're making 1% in cash and inflation's running at 3%, you're really losing too.
That's right.
Oof.
Shall I stop talking?
No, great point.
I mean, it makes me sad, but it's a great point.
That's right.
It's a point to be made.
Just a couple quick questions. The income from the operating pool, roughly $24 million per year, did that go into the general operating budget?
Yes.
Okay. And what about the income from the endowment pool? Where does that go? Does that stay in that fund or that pool?
It has to stay within the endowment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just builds the endowment.
So the total assets we're talking about here is roughly $1.4 billion. Now, is that generated, you know, our drive to fund an endowment, which finishes this year, I'm just blanking on the term.
Brilliant Futures.
Yeah, Brilliant Futures. That goal was $2.25 billion, if I remember correctly. Is that where most of these assets come from?
No, I mean, most of that is over into the foundation, you know, over in the foundation's endowment. We hold, if you look at the two pieces to the endowment, the university's endowment, by far the largest piece, or 95% of it, is over at the foundation, you know, and that's where these are basically over time, basically endowment gifts and a lot of it's farmland, as you've heard, and other things that have been given to the university specifically as an endowment, but given to the university. And okay. This is what we're holding.
As opposed to the foundation.
Right.
But
well,
you put the two together, and you would have this amount and the foundation's portfolio.
So this is strictly just university, not foundation.
Yeah, we're just this. You know, yeah.
Thank you for explaining that, because I thought, geez. There's something missing here.
Yes, thank you. Do you think that you could provide us a summary of the investment philosophies from Harvard, Princeton, and Yale, and how their allocation is different than ours? But not right now, but
okay.
Just send us a note and explain that.
And so I could probably do two of the three right now, but...
okay, well, that might be interesting. Would anybody like to hear that?
Sure, yeah. Great.
Yeah. It's very interesting, because they have a different philosophy than traditionally been embraced by most institutions. So go.
Great.
Oh, okay.
They want to hear it.
So the endowment model that's been employed by several Ivy League institutions, most famously Yale University and Harvard, involves allocating a large portion of the portfolio to alternative investments and highly liquid private equity and real estate. So those institutions have said, our endowment is so large that the portion that we need for operations is so small that we can take on a high degree of illiquidity. That is, we can invest in investments where we won't get our cash back for 10 or 15 years. That means they've put less in public market equities and also less in traditional fixed income investments. So they've tended to favor hedge funds, private equity, natural resource investments, levered real estate. So over the last 20 years, that strategy has done much better than a portfolio that's oriented towards public market equities or fixed income. So the portfolio that we had shown you, the result historically, I think, has been more oriented towards publicly traded securities, a lot in U.S. equities, publicly traded non-U.S. equities, and fixed income. We've been incrementally changing that. We're adding hedge funds. We're adding an allocation to core real estate. We recently, about 5-6 years ago, added private equity. We're increasing that. So I think we're migrating towards that approach that's used by those fine institutions. But there are a lot of differences between how they operate and what they do that allows them to implement that we may not be able to do here.
Can you just put that in a memo to us so that we understand that?
Certainly.
You know, they are our competitors. We want to understand what constraints we're operating under that prevent us from competing fully with them.
Yes, sir.
In the RFPs for the investment managers, is there a request for information regarding the diversity programs within those investment managers?
I would have to double check that. I believe that's a standard part of the evaluating investment managers is asking about diversity and diversity efforts, but
I think
I'm
when
not
that
concerned.
Comes to us for approval, we'd like to just understand what their programs are.
Okay.
In each of their firms. Okay. Anybody else?
No other questions for Brady and Angela?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I thought that was great. I think if we can bring it back more regularly.